From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Welcome to this week's edition of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. I am pleased to advise NAPS members that two bipartisan bills were introduced this week of particular interest to EAS-level postal employees. First, Representative Jerry Connolly of Virginia, Chairman of the House Subcommittee on Government Operations, was joined by Representative Michael Bost of Illinois in introducing H.R. 1623, the Postal Supervisors and Managers Fairness Act. The legislation would provide a modicum of fairness, timeliness, and resolution to the consultative process for pay and benefits. Second, Representative Connolly, along with Representative Dave McKinley of West Virginia, introduced H.R. 1624, the Postal Employee Appeal Rights Amendment Act. This bill would provide approximately 7,500 headquarters EAS employees the right to appeal adverse actions to the Merit System Protection Board. This is a right enjoyed by all other EAS-level postal employees. NAPS will be prioritizing these two bills during our upcoming virtual legislative training seminar to be conducted on Sunday, April 18th. Please register as soon as you can on the LTS page of the NAPS website. Now let's turn to this week's NAPS Chat guest. I am delighted to welcome Jay Hibbard of the Distilled Spirits Council of the United States. He is Vice President of Government Relations. It may surprise NAPS Chat listeners, but there is a substantive postal issue over which the Distilled Spirits Council and NAPS is collaborating, and we'll talk more about that issue in a couple of moments. Jay was an elected public official in Portland, Maine, and worked in government affairs both at the state and federal level for quite some time. Jay has led initiatives to expand market access to and the responsible use of alcoholic beverages. Jay, welcome to NAPS Chat.
Thank you very much, Bob. Glad to be with you today.
One question I like to ask all of our guests out of the box is, how do you personally use the Postal Service, and what is the earliest recollection of you either receiving or sending mail?
Oh, good question. I would say, you know, the post office is important to me for a variety of services, you know, whether it's bill paying or that, you know, special card that folks send in today's electronic world. I know for a fact that the handwritten letter is the one that gets noticed. And so I'm of the old school, I guess, so I continue to use the post office that way. The earliest recollection I have is probably from my time as a young boy in Maine at Boy Scout camp, where I'd be gone for, you know, 2 to 4 weeks during the summer. And it was the communication I had with my family. I'd get a postcard from my mother, typically, or, you know, send a postcard to her. So that's some of my earliest recollections. And I bet you if I look in my personal archives, I've probably still got some of those.
Let's talk a little bit about the Distilled Spirits Council. Could you talk about your membership and the priorities that you hold?
Sure. The Distilled Spirits Council is a national trade association. We're headquartered in Washington, D.C., and we represent the largest marketers, importers, and manufacturers of distilled spirits sold in the United States. It is a longstanding organization, and we have a presence in Washington on Capitol Hill, where we work on a variety of issues related to beverage alcohol. And we also have a presence in all 50 states where we have interest, because as your listeners may know, the control of alcohol is actually designated to the states on a state-by-state business. And all of the rules and regulations are a little bit different from state to state. So we just make sure that, you know, we're on top of that. And as you noted in my background introduction, a lot of our interest is in those states where we are trying to make sure that spirits are treated equally with our brethren in the industry, beer and wine, and that folks can access the products that they want where and how they would like.
In contrast to other types of alcoholic beverages, how would you define a distilled spirit?
Well, it's obviously in the manufacturing process where spirits are just that. They are distilled through a process. They have typically a higher ABV or alcohol by volume content, but that's why you look at a 12-ounce beer, a 5-ounce glass of wine, and 1.5 ounce of distilled spirits all contain the same amount of alcohol. But it's an interesting industry. And at this point, the spirits share of the industry, if you will, has been growing for 15 years straight, where we have been capturing increased market share. So there's a lot of consumer interest out there in distilled spirits because there are so many interesting things being made these days.
So if I would define a distilled spirit, I'd say probably whiskey, bourbon, scotch, vodka.
You're right on track. Those are all distilled spirits. Yes, sir.
Am I leaving any out?
Oh, you've got gin, fast-growing category, anything, you know, of that sort. A lot of the liqueurs are distilled spirits. There are specialty products. There are cognacs. There are Armagnacs. Yes, there are a tremendous amount of spirits out there that are now being used across the country, both at home, certainly for the last year or so, and then as you know, our on-premise partners reopen in incredibly interesting cocktails that are taking place in most cities across the country.
Now, you say the distilled spirit market is growing. Can you tell me how large your market is?
Well, we're in the many billions, if you would. The folks that are in this business have very broad portfolios. So it's occasionally you'll see somebody that's making, you know, one or two type of products, for instance, a vodka and a gin, and others that are into, you know, incredibly wide range of products. The fact is that consumer tastes have changed over the years. Vodka had a very hot period a number of years ago where you saw flavor extensions, and it was driven by the cocktail culture and some of what was happening, you know, in popular media, if you will. And today we're seeing more growth in brown spirits. So there's whiskeys and bourbons and single malts and those sort of things that folks are very interested in and in trying new products that are entering the market. It used to be that you could only obtain certain things or they were associated in certain ways. So you had, you know, Scotch whiskey that came literally from Scotland. But there is a tremendous growth in American whiskey and the folks that are producing that all across the country. And, you know, surprisingly, even though most bourbon comes from Kentucky, that's a fact and will continue to be for a very long time because they've been at it for so long. There are bourbons that are being made in other states, including states like Florida and Texas and across the country. So it's a tremendously interesting marketplace with a lot of growth and a lot of folks trying to find new products of interest to them.
The members of your council, how do they define their consumers or how do they interact with whom they deem to be their consumers?
Well, their consumers are anyone that's of legal drinking age, so 21 and up, and their interaction, if you will, with their consumers ranges from advertising, typical, in-store promotion, shelf promotion, that sort of thing, and then a lot of the brand building, which is, you know, where folks become aware of what's coming to the market, what some of the new things are. That takes place in the on-premise establishment. So that's bars and restaurants where you go in and they'll have a special or they'll have some new product to introduce you to. And that's always a way for a consumer to get a chance to try a product before they have to go out and buy a full bottle to decide whether or not they like it. One thing we've pursued over the years and we've now achieved, I think, in 46 states across the country, are the opportunities for liquor stores to conduct tastings. It's the exact same thing. We'd go to a store, they'd have, you know, two or three bottles open where you could have a quarter or half an ounce to try a product. that's coming to market to decide whether or not you like it before you invest in purchasing a bottle of it. So that's been an extremely important way for our member companies to interact with consumers.
Now let's talk about the confluence of your industry, particularly the council and the United States Postal Service. How does the Postal Service figure prominently in the future for your members?
Well, I think you're aware and your members are aware of the bipartisan Shipping Equity Act that has been introduced in previous sessions of Congress. And it's quite simply provided the USPS with the ability to ship beverage alcohol in a consistent way with state and local laws regarding alcohol delivery. And that's where our interests overlap, if you will. We would like to see the post office be able to enter the marketplace and provide the opportunity for consumers to receive beverage alcohol in the way that they want directly from a manufacturer. So one of our members might be able to ship to a consumer somewhere in the country, and the post office could be the carrier, along with other private service carriers that are currently in the business. So it provides another opportunity for folks to participate in the new system.
Now, it's my understanding from the Postal Service's perspective that there's a potential of $50 million in revenue that could be raised through the carriage of distilled spirits through the U.S. Postal Service.
Well, we've heard that number, too. And the one thing that we did learn was that that was an estimate from quite a few years ago, back in the early 2013, I think that might have been put on the table as a suggestion. The marketplace has changed and grown since then, so I suspect that that number may in fact be a little bit larger now than it would have been in 2013. More states have opened up to the direct shipment of alcohol. Wine is now available for direct ship. I think it's in 44 states across the country. Spirits can be shipped in 10 states. We're looking to grow that number substantially as much as we can. And then beer can be shipped in 13 states. So there is an opportunity there for the Postal Service and its employees to be participating in that system if the permission were granted via the Shipping Equity Act.
So the $50 million has fermented a bit in the last couple of years.
Good way to put it, and it's probably improved with age.
Now, I assume there are postal restrictions. We know there are postal restrictions on the books for the carriage of distilled spirits, and they date back to Prohibition, which is about a century ago. What are those obstacles?
Some of the things that folks are rightly concerned about, and the Distilled Spirits Council, you know, has the same concerns, is we want to make sure that the recipient of those shipments is over the age of 21, which requires, you know, production and checking of an identification card of some sort, you know, typically a driver's license that says you're making a legal delivery. And that's probably the biggest obstacle, you know, for folks when they look at it and say, is the Postal Service capable of doing that? We believe that answer is yes. Your employees ship an enormous or deliver an enormous range of products, including, I understand, live chicks, which is a very sensitive product, I'm sure. So, you know, you're delivering, you know, a variety of things today. Your carriers, your employees know how to handle, you know, sensitive products. And I think, you know, that being able to check an ID is just one thing that, you know, is being thrown out there as a red herring. But we believe that, in fact, your employees are certainly capable of doing that.
I should mention that the individuals who would be responsible for actually delivering the products to the door, to the actual consumer, the National Association of Letter Carriers and the National Rural Letter Carriers Association, in the past have endorsed the Shipping Equity Act introduced by Jackie Speier.
Yeah, we understand that too, Bob, and we think that that's great that they're on board with it. And the reality is the Postal Service goes literally the last mile, whether that is in an urban setting or a rural setting. And I think that's, you know, one thing that you can point to that makes the USPS, you know, a partner, if you will, in or participant in the shipment of beverage alcohol. is regardless of where that consumer is, you are there 6 and sometimes 7 days a week making those deliveries.
Yeah, that leads me to my next question is what advantage does the Postal Service have over private carriers such as UPS and FedEx? And I guess that's because we go everywhere. And for those out of the system areas that UPS and FedEx don't deliver to, the Postal Service does in fact deliver the last mile.
That's right. That's exactly right. And especially when you look at some of the states that are both considering legislation at the state level to allow their consumers, their citizens to receive beverage alcohol via shipment, there's a lot of rural area that's covered there. And certainly there's a lot of urban folks, you know, they can access different products different ways. They may have more opportunity. Some of the rural residents, they don't have that. I'll just use Maine as an example. That's my home state. And Maine, while it has a couple, you know, a few urban pockets, if you will, it is largely a rural state. Yet the Postal Service is going there 6 days a week to every address in that state.
Yeah, you're not going to find UPS making daily deliveries to some of the most rural counties in the state of Maine or North Dakota or Montana. Neither are you going to find liquor stores in some of those locations. So your access to high-quality spirits is somewhat limited in those areas unless you can have the Postal Service deliver those beverages to those areas and serving a much-needed desire out there, I would assume.
Yeah, it could well be. I think that you're right on saying that, you know, it's a very different situation when someone lives in a more rural area than in an urban center where they have access and these kinds of things don't become issues. But when you're talking about a very rural area, the opportunity for the Postal Service to participate, you know, could be a real game changer for some of the folks that live there.
Let's talk about the legislation introduced in the past by Representative Jackie Speier of California, and that is the U.S. Postal Service Shipping Equity Act. Do you expect the bill to be introduced this year?
Well, the conversations that we've had on Capitol Hill would indicate that it will probably be reintroduced later this spring. And, you know, we look forward to that. I suspect it will look very much like previous introductions. And we think that it's an opportunity, and I think everybody, all of your listeners, certainly your members, are aware of the financial situation of the U.S. Postal Service and the changes that are being undertaken to sort of put it on more stable financial ground. That's great. I know you have a lot of issues that are well outside our conversation. But at the same time, when there is, you know, available funding on the table, and the opportunity to realize, you know, what could be north of $50 million in revenue, it seems to make some sense that the Postal Service would be allowed to participate in the direct delivery of beverage alcohol.
What do you think the prospects are for the legislation moving this Congress?
Well, it may be a little bit better. It's hard to say. We know that Representative Carolyn Maloney of New York is the chairman of the Committee of Jurisdiction at this point, you know, that she would be the one, you know, ushering through some of this. And we also know that there is a great deal of interest in her home state, the state of New York, to support something like this. There is legislation introduced in New York that would allow direct-to-consumer shipment of spirits. And there are a tremendous number of small distillers in New York that would benefit from this as well. And so that's one of the things that we're looking at is, you know, the matching up the pieces between the federal interests and the state interests.
Are there any state issues that could prove to be problematic to the shipment of distilled spirits?
Well, it's difficult to say if they're really problems or they're just something that needs to be addressed, not necessarily legislatively, but more from a regulatory standpoint. Some states have reporting requirements that, you know, when it comes to beverage alcohol, both the shipper and the carrier have to make reports to a regulatory agency so that all of those pieces can be matched up to ensure that the state is, you know, keeping track of what's going into their particular jurisdiction and also what the tax collection would be. The carrier is not responsible for collecting taxes or remitting taxes. the carrier might be responsible for reporting how many shipments they made on behalf of a particular shipper. But again, your system is already geared to tracking numbers and tracking packages and knowing what's happening with them within the system. And so for you to be able to say you made X number of shipments on behalf of a particular producer is not, I don't think, something that's out of the range of your abilities to comply with. I think that that's something that you're very easily able to comply with.
Let me, you know, on a state level or on the federal level, how can we as postal employees work together with the industry to promote shipping alcoholic beverages or particularly spirits by the U.S. Postal Service?
Well, as you know, we've talked here, it's one thing for Congress, you know, to adopt the USPS Shipping Equity Act, which would give you the permission to participate. It's another in that the state also has to allow the direct shipment of alcohol. And so it's one thing to get the permission, it's another to be able to execute that. And that's where I think our interests also overlap, is that, you know, we would want to see some encouragement from your membership, if you will, to suggest to their state legislators that this is a good idea, not just the permission from Congress, but the allowance for their citizens or the folks in their particular states to receive those shipments, because those two pieces have to match up. You can't ship into a state that doesn't allow the direct shipment of beverage alcohol. So the two pieces coming together, state allowing the shipment, the receipt of alcohol, and then Congress granting permission for the USPS to participate in that system, you know, it's a good match.
I'm curious. I just was thinking of this, and has Amazon gotten involved in shipping spirits? Do you suspect that they are interested in this also? I'm just thinking of the question.
It's an interesting question. I suspect they're probably interested, but at this point in time, they wouldn't qualify to participate in the system. So all of the state laws that are adopted that we're aware of, you have to be a producer. You have to actually be part of the beverage alcohol system. So you're going to be a vintner or a brewer or a distillery or a cidery or something like this. And that's where the participation originates. So it's from that producer level direct to the consumer. And at this point in time, Amazon does not qualify to participate. So you're not going to be going to their website to order something. You're going to be going to the website of your favorite producer, or if you read about something in a whiskey magazine, for instance, or a blog or a social post that sounds interesting to you. That's how, you know, folks learn of this. And as you know, the social media side of any marketplace is now growing in importance. And that's the way folks learn about what's out there for new product or interesting product. And they'd say, gee, I'd like to participate in that. I'd like to try that particular product. Or similar to what's happened, you know, with wineries over the years, folks visit the winery. They want to have a bottle shipped home. More and more, we're seeing, you know, distillery tourism. There's the American Whiskey Trail. There's the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. There are, you know, trails or opportunities like that now in almost every state. 10 years ago, there might have been, you know, somewhere around 100 distilleries. Today, we're looking at nearly 2,000 distilleries across the country, and they're all making really interesting products. They're all making something that's locally sourced ingredients or something that's special. And you, again, you may run across them on a trip when we get back to travel. You've heard about them, someone's written about them, and you feel like this is an opportunity you'd like to take advantage of. You'd like to try that product, or you'd like to have something shipped to you. So that's where the Shipping Equity Act could play a big role.
Yeah, Jay, we were talking before we went on about, on my bucket list is a trip to Scotland to visit some of those distilleries that are known for this single malt. And one of my favorite scotches is Talisker 10-Year. It's affordable, and it's available, and it's good. But I want to ask you, what is your favorite drink?
Well, interesting question. I'm not, a complicated guy. My favorite drink is a silver coin margarita. It's a very simple drink. And I would say it's something that every one of your listeners could make at home if they like a margarita. It is simply your favorite tequila, and it should be 100% agave. Silver is fine. So tequila comes in three aged levels, if you will, silver or blanco on the early end, and then reposado, which has been aged, and añejo, which is the most aged, which is often really a sipping drink. So, you know, if you ever have an interest in trying something a little bit different, Bob, I'd encourage you to look into some of the añejo tequilas out there, and some of that on ice would be a great drink. But in my case, you know, a good silver 100% agave tequila, some Cointreau as a mixer, basically in equal parts, and then topped off with plain lime juice. And it's a bit tart, but I'll tell you that it is a delicious drink. And for those that are of an interest in the calorie count, it's in fact a pretty good drink on that side too, because you're not getting that highly sugared margarita mix that's out there. So that's my favorite drink, is a silver coin margarita.
I want to thank you, Jay, for sharing that with us. This is Jay Hibbler, the Vice President for Government Relations of the Distilled Spirits Council, and I want to thank him for joining me on this week's edition of Naps Chat. For more information on the Distilled Spirits Council, go to distilledspirits.org. Thank you for joining me today, Jay.
Appreciate it very much, Bob. Glad to be with you.
To our listeners, if you enjoy Naps Chat, please leave a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more important, tell your friends to download our podcast and listen in. Be well and safe until next week.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm going